Hello, and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by informed millennial and Gen Xer types. It is Thursday, December 21st, 2017. Lots in the news. Rachel will be joining us for the second half of the podcast tonight. She has a prior engagement, but we have a very special guest. Very happy to have Mr. Harmon Leon back. Welcome back, Harmon.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
He is a comedian, a writer, a gonzo, infiltrator, whatever you want to call him, man of many hats, and he's got an awesome new book coming out. Why don't you just jump in and tell us a little bit about the book?
The book indeed. The book is called Meet the Deplorables, Infiltrating Trump America, and it's my exploits going out undercover in disguise and infiltrating various sects of Trump supporters. And another cool aspect of the book, it's a collaboration with political cartoonist Ted Roth.
Yeah. His stuff is really good. And we got to read an excerpt. We haven't read the whole thing yet, but we got to read some cool parts from the book. We're going to, obviously, as soon as possible, purchase the book. And it's more kind of like the stuff that you've done, but here in the era specifically of Donald Trump, there's some interesting twists on it that we found. The New Hampshire tattoo guys, that was a thing, man. I just the cluelessness and sort of being caught up. It was almost like retro. Like, mm-hmm. Thinking about, like, you know, the 90s when the branding thing got really big and just people just kind of mindlessly, like, smacked brands on themselves. And you know what I'm talking about? Like, the early aughts and late 90s, that seemed like it was more of a thing than now, but I guess it's
right.
not played out.
Yeah, I mean, just to fill people in on that chapter. So, basically, the book's sort of in five different sections. So I try to kind of designate, you know, different sects of Trump supporters. So that's from the first part of just pure crazy Trump fanatics. There was this tattoo parlor in New Hampshire, and leading up to the election, their gimmick was to give free Trump tattoos to whoever wanted a Trump tattoo.
Which the guy probably didn't think he was ever going to have to live up to. I mean, I can't think of any tattoo artists who's going to give away their work for free, no matter how crappy they are, you know.
You know, throughout the election, you saw the rallies and just the pure crazy kind of fanatics of Trump. And this guy was a pure Trump fanatic. And again, what you got a lot from these guys and from other people in the book was – you get a lot of people who say, I never voted in an election before,
but this is
the first one that's really made me go out there. And for this guy, it was made him not only go out there, but give away free Trump tattoos. and the twist of that is he was a really crappy tattoo artist.
Oh, you can see that in the photos.
His Trump tattoos look like the Gerber baby.
Well, granted, they're free, and I'm sure he's not putting his heart and soul into each one, and he's probably just trying to get these idiots in and out the door since he has to live up to this promise. But even so, it's like, this is not quality work in any sense of the word.
Yeah. So, I just spent the day watching people, you know, one right after the other getting their Trump tattoos. Some just like basic Make America Great, like on their shoulder.
Uh-huh,
And then others more elaborate, like, going the length of their leg or Trump as Superman.
You know, here's what's interesting about that. You do have to hand it to, and you brought this up in the book, at this point, he was only the nominee. And most people didn't think he was going to win. So it's almost the intellectual equivalence of, like, getting a Michael Dukakis tattoo, like, in 1988. And obviously Dukakis wasn't a pop culture icon before he ran for president, but... had Trump lost the election, 20 years from now, you really probably have a hard time explaining your tattoo.
Yeah, that was a question I asked. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that was, you know, probably one of the, in the top three first questions I would ask them, you know. But they, again, they just had their blind allegiance of, you know, wanting to show their support by inking Trump on their human body.
Well, well, most of them. What really caught my attention, I mean, I get the guys who, you know, the I'm a construction worker and Trump supports my values and, you know, whatever bullshit they bought.
Right.
That, like, there were one or two, at least I know the one dude was just like, man, I don't know, it's a free tattoo, whatever. It's like,
yeah, so it ran the gamut of that. But
or, hey, this is going to make a crazy story. It's like, yeah, I guess it will. Maybe not really. It's just a bad tattoo. It's like,
yeah, I mean, if he was a, you know, a good tattoo artist, that's one thing, but he wasn't. So it's like, not only are you getting Trump inked on your body forever, but you're having it not really well done.
Well, I think what that dude was thinking, if he was thinking, was, oh my God, the free publicity, and yeah, I'll do these Trump tattoos, but then I'll get enough legit business doing whatever other, you know, tattoos. I don't know. I don't really care, but you know, what the guy's motivation was.
I mean, it was just a small town in New Hampshire. It was like right over the Massachusetts border. So it was just kind of like this tiny, tiny town.
Yeah, yeah. And New Hampshire, Massachusetts, two states Trump lost. So
yeah,
whatever. That was an interesting chapter. But before I get into the rest of the book, I did have to point something out that before it slips my mind, because I had tweeted this to you a couple weeks ago, that they were talking on some cable talking head show about a book called Republican Like Me.
Ah,
I was like, hey, wait a
minute.
Callback. Deja vu. Yeah, right? And, but it's funny and ironic, too. I mean, and this was just like a few weeks ago this book, I guess, came out. Republican Like Me, I'm trying to look at the tagline, How I Left the Liberal Bubble and Learned to Love the Right. So, Bizarro Harmon Leon is out there, and he wrote a book ripping off. And I was thinking, like, hey, man, that's, you know, you can't sue over a book title. I realize that. You know, they've all been taken 10 times over. But it's funny. Like, a couple things strike me about it. It's by some dude named Ken Stern, and I don't know who the hell he is. But, like, he borrowed the name of your really, really good book. And, like, this just came out now. Like, I remember there were a bunch of these books that came out, like, maybe in the early years of the Clinton era when Clinton wasn't so popular, or when, you know, John Kerry was running. Like, oh, now I'm – like, what a hell of a time to say, oh, I was liberal, but, you know, now in the age of unabashed greed and robber barons and neo-Nazis infiltrating our party – and, you know, child molesters, it's like, no, now's the time where I got to say, yeah, I'm really feeling this conservative Republican thing. It's like, all right, dude, I mean, timing, but, you know, what do I know? It's also hard for me to imagine there was ever, I mean, because, like, the opposite is happening right now everywhere. You got all these conservatives at least acting like they're no longer conservative, and they're moving away from the movement and the party, and there's always a hipster out there who's like, hey, wait a minute. Let me tell you something. Yeah, this is the way I'm going after I get my tattoo in New Hampshire.
So, and he took my book title.
Yeah, son of a bitch. So I just thought – I thought of you, of course, and I was like, hey, come on, dude. That's – we already got that book title. And anyway, so any other thoughts from the making of this book? Like, how, you know, how long did it take? How did you hook up with Ted Rall and all that?
Oh, Ted, I've known for years. So he lives here in New York. So we've been trying to put together a book project for, yeah, since I lived in New York for 5 years. So we've come across a few other ideas, and then, you know, Trump became president, and that's an easy hook. Yeah. I mean, but these are a lot of stories I've done, you know, over the past couple of years for like Vice and The Nation and other sort of outlets. So, again, it's, you know, it kind of just, it's very topical and timely. And again, you know, we're just kind of faced with this this horrible deck of cards that's been dealt to us.
Yeah.
And just trying to make sense of it, you know?
Right, right. And one thing that stuck out to me was the Oath Keepers, when you went and infiltrated them. Mm-hmm. In tone, it very much started off like a lot of your infiltration stuff, so I was ready to sit down and get a few laughs, but it was actually just really horrifying and depressing.
And that's what you want to do as a satirical record.
Well,
it is horrifying. It is depressing.
But it's not your fault. You just presented it as is, and I think like in light of Las Vegas and we just had the anniversary of Sandy Hook, and we're like it really is just surreal how we have these mass shootings, and we literally just go backwards.
Like, yeah, I mean, just to fill people in on the Oath Keepers, if they're not familiar, I guess their main prominence, they just believe that everything is about a gun grab. That
yes.
if the government regulates guns in any sort of way, it's essentially we'll find ourselves
in FEMA
a few weeks.
Camp.
Yeah, 24/7 FEMA camp. And the main... I think like when they got the most press was during Ferguson. They were like the armed vigilantes that just suddenly appeared on roofs of buildings.
And there was some
the police said,
cognitive
we don't
dissonance
want you
there,
here.
Right?
Yeah.
Like because at first when they were doing that, it was framed as, well, wait a minute, maybe they're actually kind of doing something good now because this militarized police force that's terrorizing the local African American residents
right.
is obviously out of control. And are they there for that? It's like, no, they're there to protect the white people's businesses. Is basically what they were doing. So they can't even keep like sort of an ideological consistency enough to shroud what they're really all about here.
Yeah, and they also they came into prominence like I guess was it the Bundy Ranch in Nevada.
Yeah.
And they actually had an armed standoff.
Oh yeah, I remember that. And it was very not very covered. I mean, these guys took aim on federal agents and seemed to be ready to shoot, and the federal agents just kind of backed off and said, we don't want to get in a gunfight with these psychopaths, you know, the grazing fees are not that important.
Yeah.
I get it, but at the same time, you pointed this out, like, is this the precedent that we want to take with these people? Like, they show up with their guns and we back down?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a tough spot, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, I mean, again, it's just so strange to meet these groups when everything is framed in that mindset that anything is about taking away their guns and it was like in their logic was like Obama, this was like during when Obama was president, remember that era? that seems like
that
2000
planet,
years
that
ago
alternate reality kind of
so it says like Obama wants to make legal undocumented workers because they'll vote Democrat. And if they vote Democrat, they'll vote against guns, and then they'll take away our guns. So everything, every like point A to point C is always and then they're going to take away our guns.
and
so that's their filter that they see the world through.
Well, I have a lot more to say about this. There is this weird nexus of like some of these mass shootings have been sort of in the name of Islamic terrorism, sort of, kind of, but they were perpetrated by American citizens.
Right.
And so Trump's reaction was like, well, this obviously means we have to keep out the Syrian refugees, when the people were like from Queens and not even from Syria.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think at some point, because these people are also certainly Islamophobic, I'm sure that Venn diagram crosses over and you may have sensed some of that, and we'll get to the really crazy Islamophobic people in the Hamptons later.
Yeah.
But the Oathkeeper type people, like, even that is not enough to sort of back them off and sort of start talking about maybe some common sense gun legislation. Well, you have some people that might be sympathetic to ISIS in this country running around, and do you want them to have the access to all the AR-15s? And their answer is basically, well, yeah.
Well, not if you read later on in the book, you get to the chapter of the anti-Muslim gun stores, which there is a lot of, and there's a court case pending on it. So, Yeah, that chapter was all about gun stores that won't allow Muslims into their establishments.
Now, that's horrible, and it's illegal, and it's unconstitutional. But yep. but at least there's like a glimmer of some logic in there, as twisted as it is. Mm-hmm. Of course, these people also don't want any regulation at gun shows or to be able to buy ammunition or guns over the internet or close any other loophole where essentially anybody in this country can arm themselves to the hilt at any time if they have the money.
You are going to be in for such a treat when you get later on in the book, because there's a chapter that covers that where I buy armor-piercing bullets and assault weapons off of Facebook.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. So that sect of Trump supporters been covered as well.
Well, let me in the
gun section.
You know, I don't think we talked about this the last time you were on, but I live here in Denver, and I actually used to live in Aurora, which is a suburb, you know, like 20 minutes
east. Oh, right, yeah.
And I lived right around the corner from the Century Theater. I went to that movie theater, and this was after. I moved after, but soon after the whole James Holmes thing. Mm-hmm. And what happened here was actually kind of fascinating. People very quickly moved at the state level to enact some common sense gun regulation in light of that. Like, how did the crazy guy buy this armory online and shoot up a theater? We should do something about that. And it had very wide public support, even here in Colorado, which is a very, very gun crazy state.
Sure.
And the people who enacted those laws all got recalled.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an important lesson, because even though the and recall elections are rare here, by the way. I know. I almost tried to lead one, and even the Democrats were like, "Don't fucking do that." So even though it had overarching public support, the people who show up and show up religiously are the gun nuts.
Right.
And this is what has sort of breathed life into the fact that we are literally going backwards every time there's a mass shooting. Every time there's a mass shooting and 95% of the American public says, yeah, we need common sense gun laws, we go the other way and take more restrictions off. More and more and more and more. And it is because the gun nut crazies are the only ones that consistently show up to vote, because they are so passionate about this. And then, you know, and then these people have always been around. We know this. But in the age of Alex Jones and Trump and other Republicans sort of embracing those people to make sure they vote for them, like, it has become more allowable sort of to wear the tinfoil hat and say Sandy Hook never happened and these were actors and Gabby Giffords is an actress who only pretended to be shot in the face. And, like, wow, here we are.
Yeah, exactly. And if that infuriates you, get to the chapter on in Las Vegas, the gun store that has assault weapon weddings.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So in Las Vegas, there's a gun store, and you can seal your vows by you and your new bride firing off assault weapons.
At each other? Or?
Not at each other.
That's, they don't duel? Yeah, but, you know,
no.
Okay. Yeah.
But that comes later. So, you know, like with the Oath Keepers, that, you know, they were all, you know, Alex Jones. It was like being in an Alex Jones chat room come to life. And then what you're saying about the actors is there's this theory that like shooting tragedies like Sandy Hook are staged with actors just so you know guns can be taken away from us, and so they stage these things with actors, and no one really they haven't figured out that, you know, okay, we live in the age of cell phones, so how does this really happen?
Oh, well, let's not bring
this cover up.
Let's not bring logic into this, right?
Yeah, I know. So,
I mean, the sick part of that is, Harmon, is that the people who espouse these beliefs are now being like appointed to government, high-ranking government jobs, and are White House advisors, and Trump is trying to nominate them to the federal judiciary. Like, these crazies have infiltrated normalcy at this point. And, like, people don't really get it, and they don't really know this is going on. And this is kind of why this book is important. Like, it's not just, like, there was a quaint time maybe 15, 20 years ago you would write about these people, and we could laugh and say, oh, look at these crazies that believe this crazy stuff. And I know you always had the overall theme, like, well, they're among us, but it's like now they're among us and they're at the highest levels of the U.S. government.
Yeah, so I think that's a big difference in, you know, say, you know, back in when I was doing my other books, is that these would be considered fringe groups, and they're not so much – they're not really fringe groups anymore.
Right.
The fringe groups have gone mainstream. I mean, just look at – like a friend of mine, he grew up in Austin. You remember when Alex Jones was just the lunatic on – local public access.
Yeah,
people that he would just laugh at,
kick his ass, and then he would go on Facebook and cry about it. Yeah,
yeah. And now I think this was like even pre-Facebook, so it was like
the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, now he's got you know, Trump like supports him.
Oh yeah, no, he has White House press access.
Yeah, and Alex Jones is just playing barking at the moon crazy.
Yeah.
Either that, or he's just playing up a big shtick. But I don't think it's a shtick.
I think some of it might be a shtick, but I mean, that's – I got to hand it to these conservative types. Like, they know their sucker's audience, and they know people will just not stop sending them money the crazier shit they say.
Yeah.
So like whether they believe it is kind of secondary. They've got a good business model. I got to hand them that.
Well, a good business model and influence as well. I mean, yeah. You got Trump actually praising Alex Jones, for God's sake.
And getting away with it.
Yeah.
And people just waiting for his normalcy pivot after he does shit like this and says that neo-Nazis are fine people and breathes life into, you know, Sandy Hook conspiracy theories and shit like that. And we just have to keep reminding people, because I don't think the mainstream press and a lot of America knows what to do with a situation that is as crazy as it is. Like, they can't really stop and absorb how crazy shit has gotten. So this book is pretty important, and books like it, because it says, no, it's this fucking crazy. And here are some examples. Let me tell you firsthand, I was there, I saw it. I think the one thing that was, I don't know if comforting is the word, but the one thing that sort of calmed me down a little bit when I was reading about the Oathkeeper meeting was that, like most meeting, like public space meetings, like city council or whatever, nobody could really agree on anything. One guy wanted a billboard, and the lady that looked like the sister from The Simpsons was like, no, I don't want a billboard. We need to do more. And then it's like they couldn't even really get together other than just to bitch about how they're scared of everything and they're going to come take their guns.
Yeah, and there was also a little bit of empathy for them, because I, it's like with this book, I try to dig a little bit deeper into these characters than on the surface. They're just kind of – there were a lot of them were just kind of like working class guys from like Staten Island.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's like these – you know, people when life, you know, hasn't dealt them, you know, the best – you know, things are going sour for them. So – it's easier to go on the internet and blame their own, you know, misfortunes for a conspiracy that's going on in the world. It's like, look, I have no control over this. There's this conspiracy that's happened, and that's why, you know, I'm kind of struggling to get by.
Yeah, my bigger problem, and you're right, my bigger problem with all that, especially how Trump and the Republicans were able to tap into that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that there's been all this talk like, well, you know, how did they tap into this? And people like to ignore, especially in the mainstream media, the undercurrent of racism and horrible sexism and misogyny that was able to make that bridge, right?
Right.
That's the problem. Democrats aren't willing to go there, most of them at least, and they shouldn't go there because that's not the core of our message. So Donald Trump, the Republicans are able to say, hey, you're getting a raw deal, Joey the construction worker, Frank the plumber, you know, you're getting a raw deal, and look at what they're getting.
Yeah.
Look at the welfare and the free cell phone and the this and the that. That's not fair, right? And like that kind of caught their attention. So like we as progressives can't go there. I mean, Bernie Sanders kind of wants to go there, but I think most of us don't want to go there and can't go there, and we're not going to go there. And we do need to hone our message better, but not like that. I think there are enough working class type people, even white people out there, that we can get a message across to them without the racism and maybe pick off enough of them. But the thing is getting out the young people and the people of color to show up and vote consistently. But anyway, that's a whole other topic.
Sure.
But, you know, when you talk about these working class white people who gravitated to Trump, it's like people like to forget about the whole racism thing. You can't forget about the racism. That's kind of what got them there.
Well, again, I mean, there's many sects, and that was just like one sort of thing that he really tapped into is that. And then there's the whole racist thing, then, and that's like a whole section of the book as well.
Right. Well, the Republicans and Trump have run the whole gamut of the different shades. There's just the outright, flat out racism, and then there's the more subtle stuff. And you know. it's a broad stroke of racism.
And because like early on it was being spun by like Roger Stone and Bannon and those guys are just grand manipulators.
Oh yeah,
everything is like orchestrated. You know, nothing's unintentional. It's like, oh well, you know, they didn't mention the Jews on Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Right.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Sure, sure, sure. You're damn right they are. It's like,
they know who they're playing to.
And while they've replaced most of the dog whistles with just full on audible human whistles, like the dog whistles are still there too. They just do it all, and so they can bring in their whole cabal of shit.
Yes.
Anyway, back to the book. There was the tattoos. There was the Oath Keepers, and I really did enjoy the Christian Kids Hell House.
I love Hell House. I love Hell House because it's just horrific. Not horrific, scary. Just what a crazy mindfuck for these kids. These poor kids.
Yeah, it is. It is scary for the little 8-year-olds that mom is trying to scare straight out of domestic abuse and something. I don't even really understand what the point was, but I guess it's to just be terrified of hell, which is the core of you know, evangelical Christianity. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, just to familiarize people with Hell House, what it is, it's a Christian haunted house where instead of, say, Freddy Krueger jumping out and scaring the living bejeebies out of you, these costumed Christian evangelists scare the living Jesus into you, literally.
Yeah, it's literally reenacting scenes of like murder and domestic abuse and botched abortions and shit like that.
Yeah, so for that story, I infiltrated it by becoming the Hell House volunteer. Yes. And actually leading groups through Hell House. So I worked next to the abortion scene room. Mm. I worked in the lesbian suicide room,
and
which, you know, the plot of this sort of cautionary tale was pretty simple. And you go in.
No, it wasn't clear at all. It didn't make any sense. I'll let you finish, and then I'll chime in that I didn't fucking get it. But anyway.
Oh, okay. So groups go through this haunted house, and there's very horrific, like, I'm putting this in quote, real life scenes that are designed to frighten kids directly into church. Or they pay the consequences, which is hell, which is graphically depicted in the final Hell House scene. And the cautionary tale of the lesbian suicide room, after a girl's high school classmates accuse her of being a lesbian, suicide soon follows.
Well, that's the part I didn't get. Like, it's not like she got caught making out with a girl, or she declared she's a lesbian. She just got bullied because of what she was wearing.
Yeah, so and for realism, the actress wore a flannel shirt.
A flannel, yes.
Of course.
Because lesbians only wear flannel. We all know that.
Well, they tried to spin it like this is about bullying, but it wasn't. Like, okay,
no.
Why don't you just accept, you know, gay people? And then they wouldn't have to be bullied.
Right.
Why don't you make your story that? It's like, oh, yeah. It was because they've gotten flack like through the years, so they try to, you know, again, they know exactly what they're doing, but well, why don't you be accepting of, you know, different people? And suicide, then they wouldn't be bullied, and then they wouldn't commit suicide.
Right. Well, I'm in a goth band, so I found this mm-hmm. amazing, and I think we're going to have to take, the whole band's going to have to take a field trip.
It's incredible.
And experience this. What a horrible mind fuck. And it's all teenagers, you said, that are volunteers and do this. I don't think anybody's getting paid, right?
Oh, no. They rake it in, dude. It was like, I just did one weekend, like, working there. It was in Cedar Hills, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And they pack it out. I think it was like $20 a head. And they just run groups in all, and they do it all month. And this, and it's a mega church in Texas, Trinity Church.
Yeah.
If you want to check it out online. And they just rake it in. God.
And
when I was there, it's like, okay. You would just see little kids like run bolting from Hell House and just like vomiting outside. And you would see that a lot. Yeah. It's just like in the abortion room, like this kid was just like just so petrified. And you'd see like, you know, girls in the audience crying. And then in the final Hell House scene, you're brought into this like this makeshift coffin room where everyone's stuffed into coffins, and it's like, welcome to hell. This is your eternity.
Yeah, that sounded amazing. I know me and the band would really get down on that. They'd have to force us to leave, but you know, as far I have to think based on like kids actually being, you know, traumatized and people crying, like. Like these kids jumped into their roles. If they were just doing like half-ass high school bad acting, I don't think anybody would buy it. So like, it sounds like they really put their heart and soul into it.
Oh yeah, but it was nothing but bad amateur religious theatrics enacted by children.
Well, it was still effective, I guess.
So there was like kind of a hierarchy of roles. So what I determined was the very best actor gets cast in the role of abortion girl.
Oh, that's the
yeah.
Prize.
She was like the queen of the Hell House Ball at a Tour de Force performance, where and that cautionary tale was very simple. After a woman has an abortion, her angry boyfriend throws her to the ground and leaves her forever, while a red-faced demon sarcastically says, "Well, why don't we have an abortion? Everyone is doing it these days."
Yeah, yeah. But from the women have abortion for fun. School.
So the takeaway of that is, if you have an abortion, your boyfriend will end up throwing you to the ground and he'll leave you forever. And scene. So no mind fuck there.
Well, that is a thing, and I have to imagine if there aren't hell houses in other parts of the country that, you know, they might want to mimic that, because that also sounds like a good business model.
Yeah.
So then you also went to the Hamptons and ran into some Islamophobes. Do I have that right?
Yeah. The Hamptons? It was in Long Island.
Oh, okay.
So, so it was probably about like an hour and a half from New York City. Right. That was a group I infiltrated called Act for America. They're basically just an anti-Muslim hate group. So their deal is they gather in, you know, they picket mosques. They want to close mosques down.
Yeah.
Just their whole doctrine is, mosques breed terrorists.
Yeah, they assume that every mosque in the entire country is all training grounds basically for suicide bombers, every single one.
Yeah, yeah. And then, everything in the Quran is all about, you know, wiping out America.
Sure.
I mean, again, these are people that see the world through that sort of filter. Sect of Trump supporters.
The problem with that, other than the obvious ones of being horribly racist and stereotyping and everything else that's awful with it, if you're serious about combating radicalism and people being radicalized to become terrorists. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the textbook way not to do it. If ISIS could come over here and write the perfect scenario to recruit more terrorists, these people are following it by the fucking book. And they're too dense to realize it. Or they just refuse to, or they just don't care. Or they think the best way is just to root out all the Muslims from the country and the world. Good luck doing that, assholes from Long Island. And that's the biggest problem here, is that I have to agree with the right wingers on one thing. Mm-hmm. Islamic terrorism is a problem. There are Islamic fundamentalist terrorists who want to blow shit up and murder people. Granted, we agree on that. The way to address that is not by isolating and disparaging and having bigotry towards American Muslims. That is how you create more radicals, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, I mean, you go, okay, all the recruiters have to say is, look what they're doing to the mosque in America.
Look what
they're trying to shut them down, you know?
And they're right.
Your place of worship.
Yeah. You are, America doesn't want you. They are ostracizing you. They don't care about you. They want to take away your right to worship. They want to take away your right, your identity and your culture, and join us in the fight. And if you are someone who is not well-adjusted and you are facing bigotry and racism, guess what? You are open. I mean, it's the same dynamic of recruiting people into white nationalist hate groups.
Right, exactly.
It's the same thing. And, you know, that will never get through their thick skulls. It will never get through Trump's thick skull. It won't get through most of elected Republicans' thick skulls. People in counterintelligence understand this, but like now that's been infiltrated by crazy people too, or is starting to be.
Right.
So that's another chapter that was kind of frustrating for me. That's not lighthearted. This book, I guess, better warn people, this book may not be as lighthearted. Not that any of the books were ever completely lighthearted, but it's not as much point and laugh at the crazy people as it is like, oh shit, the crazy people are taking over and making things really fucking dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's sort of like, it's what exactly what you're saying is like, we can read some cautionary tales into this, the tactics which, you know, Act for America uses in their kind of anti-Muslim, you know, demonstrations.
But they do bake some really nice cookies, apparently.
The cookies are delicious.
Well, that's a recurring theme, right? Because when you visited the Phelps household, apparently they were very good cooks as well. And they fed you very well, as far as I remember you telling me, right?
Yeah, I had salmon dinner at the Phelps family's home. But that's going back to the book, The American Dream. And right. Unfortunately, a lot of those people I met, like the kids have like left the church, which is.
Oh, really? You
know, yeah.
Because that wasn't that long ago, right?
No. But just like over the last couple of years, you know, I think a lot of when the kids get older, a lot of them just kind of wise up and leave. Because there's only like 70, 80 members of the Westboro Baptist Church, and it's all
members
just really
are
one family.
And now that Fred's dead, it's like there's just not the will to keep hating gays as much, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well. Oh, well. Too bad for that. So I think I've covered all the stories that we read in terms of the sort of the advanced excerpts we got. So what else can you preview as far as what's in the book for people who are interested in buying it?
Yeah, so just again, it's like the first section's just on pure crazy Trump fanatics. So like I said, there's the tattoo parlor where Trump supporters were getting free Trump tattoos. I met this guy who was so moved. Again, you know, he's one of those guys that never voted in an election before until this one. So he was so inspired that He started a him and his brother started a pro Trump rock band.
Oh God! like a cover band or
no? They wrote
They wrote original Trump songs. Yeah. That's amazing.
And spoiler alert: if you ever check them out on YouTube, they're really shitty.
Oh,
and I'm not just saying it because it's like, you know, maybe, you know, again, it was like the tattoos, you know. Well, if there were good songs, you know.
I never would have guessed that. Well, I'm sure their angle was, hey, we'll get hired for these Trump functions. Of course, they don't realize they'll never get paid, even if they're hired. But
yeah. Like the Trump girls.
Yeah. Got paid. Like, so did they get some gigs or anything?
Well, this was leading up. His dream gig was, you know, his dream was that
play the RNC
Trump
or
would
something.
Call him. Yeah.
So, and stiff him, yeah.
Yeah. So again, just pure like Trump inspired this guy so much to form a pro Trump rock band. Mm. And then I went canvassing undercover. I joined this Republican group in Pennsylvania.
Ooh,
okay. And we just working up for the election, just ringing complete strangers' doorbells.
Yeah.
Trying to pitch them on
canvassing,
Donald Trump.
Great. So, like, well, where in Pennsylvania was it, though? Because there are parts of Pennsylvania that are obviously very red for Trump. He won the fucking state, inexplicably.
Yeah. This was outside of Philadelphia. I believe it was, like, kind of by Valley Forge-ish.
Okay. All right. And not to give away too much from the book, but what was that like?
And again, it was not – I mean, it was a mixture of the reaction from people when you just, you know, ring the bell and then start pitching them on Donald Trump to, you know – pure Trump supporters that feel so inclined to be canvassing and knocking on complete strangers' doors and it was like really strange. It was like, okay, so saying you're here, you know, for Trump for president kind of turns people off. So maybe start with you're from a political organization,
right? same rules as from the other side. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is back when it was like, oh yeah, there's no way this guy's going to get elected because like just
the reaction
from people.
No, it was
just
the same.
Ridiculous.
We canvassed here for a local candidate, and then you know we would also talk about the election at large because most people wanted to, and this was like in the exurbs and suburbs of Denver where Trump in most places did really well, but the anti-Trump sentiment was just so passionate. Like, we had people ready to say, if you're here for Trump, I'm going to fucking punch you in the face.
Right.
And we just got the sense from doing it, like, how is this guy? And I do have a theory that, like, you know, when you canvass, one out of every five or six or seven doors, somebody actually answers.
Right.
And I think, like, you know, five or six of those doors that don't answer are probably the Trump voters.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't want to talk to anybody.
No. And then I think we covered a lot of other, but then there's a whole section on just pure gun crazies, and that's getting assault weapons off of Facebook and the Oath Keepers and the assault weapon weddings in Las Vegas. And then the last section is sort of more inclined of like the just sort of the climate that bred Trump into power. I go around with like a repo man in Reno. Repossessing cars in the middle of the night, just going up to complete strangers' houses, you know, and taking their automobiles.
That sounds amazing and terrifying.
Yeah, and if you thought the other ones were more on the grim side, this story is very grim. I did a story or a chapter on these homeless people that live in the tunnels below Las Vegas, you know, so just all the glitz and money that's on the surface and right below, you know, these people living in these flood tunnels below the streets of Vegas.
Sure. That's interesting and sounds utterly depressing, but I will be sure to read it. And do you think that maybe overall you're pivoting to a more sort of serious look at the state of things, or is just kind of naturally happening when you do what you've always done?
Well, it depends on, you know, the topic. I mean, if you're doing a story, you know, on, say, you know, infiltrating the family feud with a fake family like I've done in the past, you know, that's not going to be grim. But usually some of these, yeah, but some of these places you go to are just purely grim.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find yourself picking more of those topics or more of those situations? I'm just curious, you know, what your opinion of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, again, it's the era which we live in.
Yeah.
So what really draws me to things is, like, if it's something that a scenario or a group of people that are just the complete polar opposite of, like, my ideology, and just to find out what they're all about and how their thought process works.
No, and that's good, and it's important, and it takes balls of steel to do that. And, you know, I hope you keep doing it. I love your work. I love your writing. I'm just, again, sorry to be a drooling fanboy. I'm just jazzed to be able to talk to you. I've been a fan for a long, long time. Can't wait.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. I can't wait to read this book. And we're going to take a quick break here. Harmon, if you want to stick around and talk more of the state of the world with me and hopefully Rachel, if she comes in here, that would be awesome. If not, thank you so much for coming on. And buy the book. It is called Meet the Deplorables, and the hardcover version is out there. Where can people buy the book?
Oh, just all your, like, Amazons and Barnes and Nobles, and the publishing company is called 39 West Press, via their website as well.
Cool. All right, so don't go anywhere. Stick around. We will be right back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony, and we've done something interesting. We've done a time warp. When we last talked to you, it was Thursday, the 21st, and it's now Saturday, December 23rd.
Imagine that.
I don't know how that happened.
I don't know either.
But
it's weird.
You've now time traveled with us.
Yes.
I hope you've enjoyed that. Anyway, a couple things I forgot to plug was all Harmon's information. Go to www.harmonleon.com. And there you can see all the stuff, link to all his old books, his TV stuff, and also find him at Twitter at Harmon Leon. It's that simple.
Yes.
And go buy his book, many, many copies of it.
Yes.
Meet the Deplorables.
Yes. Just pre-order it and give it as gifts and all the things.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead and you can find it on Amazon. And is B. Dalton still a thing?
I don't think so.
How about, what were the other bookstores that used to be in the mall?
I don't remember. B. Dalton was the big one.
Yeah. Barnes and Noble.
Barnes and Noble,
do they still have brick and mortar stores?
Oh, yeah. 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 There's one down the street.
What was the one that closed? There was like, it was sort of
like the rival Barnes and Noble, but
And they had a better little snack bar, but they had less selection and they closed a few years ago.
Right.
What are they called?
Fuck, I can't remember. But anyway,
if you haven't noticed, we're vamping for time. there's a lot going on in our worlds right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to be moving soon. I just started a new job that's basically running kind of a new business. So my life is a little chaotic. Of course, that happens right when the holidays start.
Yes.
Because why not?
Why not?
And Rachel's got a lot of stuff on her plate, too. And we're just so we've been a little... I'm not going to say completely out of the news cycle. We kind of know what's going on, but this is not going to be as informed as, you know.
Yeah, we're not going to it's not going to be like the nightly news in the 60s where I tell you all the actual details and the reporting. We're just going to kind of talk about what we feel like and get through it. Get through the holidays together. Speaking of holidays, take care of yourselves, my lovelies. It's a hard time of year for everybody. And if you're like me, you're going to go home home is here, but you're going to have to spend time with family and friends who may not agree with you politically, and that is a hard thing.
Sorry if you happen to hear some audio that's playing that refuses to stop because my computer didn't necessarily want to cooperate either. So, you know, sorry about that. If you're a little sports center, I don't know if you did.
What the fuck?
Don't worry about it. It's all good.
All right. Anyway, take care of yourselves. If you have to talk to family that doesn't agree with you, I don't know. If you want to try to talk them into not being garbage people, it's fine. If you don't. Just get through it. It's a shitty time of year.
It's amazing. Almost everybody I talk to who is anywhere near our age range, give or take 10, 15 years, is they're almost all literally facing the same thing. It is. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but the generational divide politically that's going on in this country right now and what it's
staggering.
Causing is kind of surreal.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's, you know, it's tough anyway this time of year, but with everything going on, like, it is really horrifying. Even looking at the Roy Moore election in terms of the generational divide, we talked a lot about, you know, people of color and how they voted and white women and how garbage we are.
Right, right.
But when you looked at the generational divide, it was very different. The two things that stuck out to me was... young people overwhelmingly voted for not Roy Moore. And white evangelicals. That was the other kind of interesting thing. So there's a religion gap that we're having because white evangelicals overwhelmingly supported Roy Moore of, you know, regardless sort of age or gender.
Mm-hmm.
And non-evangelicals who were white overwhelmingly supported Doug Jones. And young people overwhelmingly are voting Democrat and supporting non-garbage people. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we can afford to just let these people die off. I think they'll take the whole country down with them before they all go.
They will vote till their last breath.
Yes,
and
they will.
They vote in much larger numbers than our generation.
Yes.
And there's just no getting around that.
You know, that's every generation. It's not like we are special snowflakes that don't vote. Young people over the span of history don't vote.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in large, there's lots of reasons for that. But, you know, we talk about this a lot. But now is kind of an interesting time in history where I don't fucking care what the reasons are. We absolutely have to fix that because the things are just ridiculous right now. And we can't just be like, well, it's all rigged and who cares, you know. What was the race that was recently just won by one vote, Trev? Virginia?
Yeah, well, that now is, it looked like the entire Virginia House of Delegates in this one district where they had a recount was going to be decided by one vote. But now it's going to be decided by a coin flip toss? or a drawing straws or something. So there's that.
So if, I don't know, an entire class of, let's say, like, philosophy 101 students in that district had just decided to all go vote, probably we wouldn't be tossing a coin to decide the future of that district.
Yes, it's enough of my vote doesn't count or who cares or I'm going to waste it or I'm going to protest vote some third-party person because, ooh, the two-party system, grr. Stop.
Can we just vote? Just do it. Just fucking do it. Tired.
Like, I don't know how much sharper in focus it needs to become in light of some things that happened this week. For instance, the tax bill passed.
Yeah.
And Republicans are in this really weird bubble where they're doing a victory lap and spiking the football and, you know, dancing in the aisles that they just did this wonderful thing that's going to be so politically great for them. I mean, some of them realize it's not, but a lot of them seem to think it is, or they're just happy they got a friggin' win, and who cares if they're going to get tossed on their asses next year. They did the thing, and now they can loot the coffers and make their friends rich, and now they can go work at think tanks for seven figures. And as usual, the Democrats will come clean up the mess.
Yep.
Come 2018 and 2020, when the economy will likely crash or at least be in a recession, and we'll have massive federal deficits to worry about. And it's like, hey, yeah, we're here to clean up the mess again.
And not even just deficits or cleaning the coffers, like that stuff. Sucks, but for me, it's making rich people richer is just obnoxious. But the cutting of programs and the cutting of funding of vital things that I care about and that matter is staggering. You know, the children's health insurance program is not being funded.
Well, they funded it. They did a short term funding of it and they kicked it to 2018 when then they're going to have to permanently try to fund it because they didn't want a government shutdown right before Christmas, which I'm kind of surprised they even cared enough to try to avoid that. It's like it can't be any more unpopular right now. Yeah. Republicans in Congress and Trump.
Right.
They're just completely bottoming out at this point. The margins right now for who do you want to control Congress are like higher than they've been in 50 years. It looks
not
like,
Republican.
Yeah. It's a pending bloodbath right now. And
but this bill will have serious consequences. I mean, it's law now. It's done. It's over. It's passed. It is a law. And we're going to have to start implementing it. And it is going to have very severe negative repercussions for the United States of America.
Well, what they've done is they've chopped off a ton of revenue, tax revenue, coming into the federal government. So very simply, in 2018, they get to turn around and say, well, we have to cut entitlements.
Yep.
And there'll be backlash to that. And it's just total chaos. They've created an absolute god-awful mess, just like George W. Bush did and like Reagan did in his first couple years. And Democrats will
but
be forced to come clean it up.
Bush was smart about it. Like, this is the thing we were talking about a couple weeks ago was when George W. Bush did something similar to this, he sent everybody a check. Mm-hmm. And it said on it, like, your tax refund because of this bill, here is money, thousands of dollars, right?
Right.
Went to families. And so they had this immediate sense of, oh, tax cut bill, good. Look at money in my pocket, literally in my hand. There's money from the government because they passed this bill,
mm-hmm.
right? Very, very, very politically savvy. Very, very, very smart. No one has any, there's nothing.
It'll be negligible, if anything, for most people.
But there's no check. There's no check that's going to come in the mail. There's no tangible thing that anyone can look to say, look, this is good.
Right.
There just isn't. First of all, it's not good. But they didn't even do the smart thing, which is like, throw me a couple bucks right now. Give me actual tangible money in my hand.
Right.
So that I can see that this is a good thing for me and my family. They didn't even do that.
No, they didn't bother.
And so even if what they're saying is true and some of these things, you know, create jobs or whatever, which it's not going to do, or people see a couple extra bucks here and there on their paycheck or whatever, it's not tangible enough for the catastrophic things it's going to do to the U.S. economy. We're going to turn into Kansas.
Yeah.
And it's going to hurt education. It's going to hurt veterans. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why that keeps happening. I'm just closing this tab.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry.
Thanks.
Very sorry about that.
Anyway, so yeah, it's pretty fucking depressing. And apparently it doesn't matter what the public wants. They don't give a fuck. This bill has had and still has absolutely no public support whatsoever. And they just did it anyway.
Yeah.
And fuck everybody. And
it's,
you know,
underwater
what?
By 30 or 40 points.
I'm like, okay. If this is what you want, this is what you voted for, this is what you want, this is what they said they were going to do, they just fucking did it. Fine.
Well, it's this
fine.
Continuing disconnect to what people vote, how they vote, and what they actually voted for, and what actually happens, and then they're left. Wait a minute! What? I don't understand what happened. It's not what I voted for. But
yeah, it is.
It's what they've been telegraphing, and so people don't really pay attention. And then,
well, I'm tired of it. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Just fuck you.
But
it all down.
They will never. The sad thing is, they will never be permanence. Because what'll probably happen is, yes, Republicans will get wiped out in 2018 and 2020. It'll take a while to fix all the damage done. So by 2022, people, because the Democrats will be in control, now it's the Democrats haven't done it, so let's bring in a bunch more Republicans, and we're going to go through this cycle again and again and again, instead of just letting adults run the government for, say, you know, 20, 30 years and fixing everything.
It's staggering.
We'll just go in these back and forth cycles of Republicans will trash the economy, Democrats will come in and fix it, Republicans will trash it, we'll fix it, and, you know, on and on and on and on it goes. We cycle.
I just...
Yeah, I mean, I could be wrong, but, like, there was nothing to nothing in the traditional sense to think in this election that, okay, Obama, you know, turned that horrible economy around and people are generally happy. And, you know, yes, there were obviously problems, but, you know, overall things were headed back in the right direction. He was a popular president. Like, we should be able to wrest, maybe hopefully control back from the Senate at least and win the presidency. Like, we thought that was at least what we could do.
Right.
And there was a crazy person that was nominated on the other side, and America said, yeah, let's give that a shot.
Yeah.
So
all these things that have been working really well, let's not do that anymore. Let's say not do it, and we'll do something completely different and opposite, in fact, and then we'll be really surprised when it goes opposite.
And I think that goes to these larger themes of we sell people on this quote American dream, like every one of you can be an entrepreneur and a CEO. Yes.
You're all going to be rich someday.
Yeah. And if you fall short of that, you got to blame somebody. It's not our fault.
Well, it's your fault, first of all, because they want to isolate people, right? They don't want Marx's message really to get across. So we've created this idea of if, you know, something's going wrong economically in your life, don't look around. Don't look to see if that's also happening in other people's lives. Look inward to see what's wrong with you. And barring that, look outward at minority groups.
Yes.
But don't look at things like the economy or, you know, job growth or stagnation
automation.
Or greed or automation or all these things that are actually what's causing economic hardship for many Americans. Don't look at that. Look inward at what's wrong with you. And then if you don't want to do that, just blame brown people.
I don't think Trump bothered with the inward thing. I think it was just straight to the brown people.
This isn't a Trump thing. This is an America thing.
Right.
Right. This is the way that we have isolated the working class and the middle class, who think that they're the upper middle class, but really they're the middle class to lower middle class, from having a workers' revolution. As we've said, it's not about the government. It's not about the economy. It's not about what we've done to you or a more sociological examination of the economy. That's not what it is. Don't look at that ever. Mm. Because if you do and you realize, especially with something like this tax bill, the just blatant greed and corruption that exists in it, there would be a revolution of people who go, wait, this is our fucking government and you can't do this. Mm-hmm. So they just say, don't do that. Look at yourself. It's your fault. Or blame brown people.
Yes.
And this is what we've been doing for centuries.
Yeah.
And that's how we are where we are.
And clearly it works.
Yeah.
So it's not going to change.
No, it's been bred into us at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's where we are on that. In other news, Republicans and the right-wing media are really gearing up to try to completely undermine the Mueller investigation into the Trump-Russia connections, because they can tell the noose is really tightening and now's the time to wriggle out of it before, you know, the hangman drops the floor beneath them. So... some things have happened this week. There's been the continuous mounting pressure. There was some connection that James Baker at the FBI leaked something to the dossier to Mother Jones, which seems really weird because a bunch of people had the dossier. So who cares if what does it matter? But whatever, he was forced to step down. So that's a feather in their cap.
Well, the FBI can't be leaking shit to Mother Jones. I get it.
I'm still not sure that actually happened, but in any event, well, it's also bullshit. I mean, every time there's some Clinton story, Fox runs with one of their FBI sources about it. So, whatever.
Yeah.
But in any event, there's a steady march towards, I think what they're going to do instead of just firing Mueller is fire Rosenstein and then get some puppet in there that sort of tries to rein in Mueller or, you know.
Yeah. Right now what they're trying to do is like
a
smear
something.
Campaign. Like they're setting the stage
for
something. Right. For Mueller and the whole FBI and the investigation and, you know, things just don't seem right. And is there this overreach? And we're just really, you know, we were for this investigation before, but it really just seems like maybe there's just
steam.
Something wrong with it. And they're setting the stage sort of to undermine his credibility so that they can do whatever bullshit they're going to try to do. I have no idea what that's going to be.
It's going to be something,
but I think it's something.
Yeah,
I think
it's
that they're
soon.
Gearing up for something because they realize like this is really bad. Really, really bad.
And, you know, I don't know what will come of that. It's not going to sway many Republican members of Congress. The public will be upset. They're already upset and they could march, but you know, I think at this point they're kind of like, so what? We're just going to hold on to power to for as long as we can.
Yeah.
To get all the legislation we can so we us and our rich friends can loot all the coffers before we get tossed on our ass in 2018. And then, you know, we'll be super rich. And fuck you. You clean up this mess. Ha ha. LOL. YOLO.
Yeah.
You know, bye.
Yeah. It does seem that they're, I don't know. It feels like it used to be there used to be some principled ideas in the Republican Party. They were wrong, of course, but they at least had some... I don't know, value set or some principles. And
no,
it does seem
grab.
Now like that's gone.
And everybody with an R attached to their name has sort of just jumped on the gravy train, right? Bob yeah. Corker was acting like he was all principled and he cared about the debt. And I was like, well, I in that interview, I guess I cared about it, but now I don't. I mean, he literally said that.
Yeah.
And then Susan Collins like, oh, no, don't worry. I got all these wonderful things to save Obamacare in this tax bill. And it's like, well, the tax bill still sucks. And they got rid of the individual mandate.
Yep.
So all your, quote, fixes are kind of meaningless.
Yep.
Oh, well, you're just, you got, he sounds like you got duped or you lied. Oh, well, now you're being sexist. Like, well, where does the sexism come in? I don't look, you know, obviously Rachel and I are very sensitive to sexism. I don't know, quite understand the sexism angle.
Well,
that
saying
seems like
she
a horrible cop out.
Saying she got duped is maybe a little sexist. Why don't you just accuse her of the same thing you accuse everybody else of? It's not that she's stupid. It's that she's...
Well, no. But that has nothing to do with her being a woman. It's because she kept apologizing or rationalizing her vote by saying, oh, no, yeah, don't worry, because I got these concessions from Mitch McConnell.
Well, then just call her
Congress,
a liar.
And they're going to do these things. And there's no evidence they're actually going to do any of these things she said she was supposedly promised not in writing to do. And they've even gone on record saying, no, we're not doing that.
So call her a liar. Don't call her stupid. She lied is what she did.
That's what I've been saying.
She's a liar. She said that was going to happen. It didn't. She voted for it anyway, so
yeah,
she lied.
Sure, but she's also maintained that, oh, don't worry, I've gotten these assurances. And that's where people are saying, well, if you mean that, you got duped. And I don't see where that's sexist. Because if her name was Steve Collins and she said the same thing, people would also say, well, then you got duped or you're lying. I don't see where the sexism comes in, but
I
know,
do.
Whatever.
I get it. I see it.
Okay, sure.
I do. Because we're not calling anyone else. No one else got duped. They all voted for it. Nobody else got duped.
Yes, but again, no one said, oh, don't worry, I'm voting for this thing you all hate, but I got these wonderful concessions to save this other thing that are probably not going to happen. So, yeah, that's the difference. So, but whatever. I mean, look, the point is if there is sexism towards Susan Collins, don't do that. That's bad.
Right.
And it doesn't absolve her in any way of making a horrible,
no.
terrible sellout vote for
no.
her constituents.
She's a garbage person.
And she's catching actual hell for it, and she seems surprised. And I don't know why she would be.
Well, I don't know why she voted for the fucking thing.
Yeah, and Murkowski sold out to get oil drilling rights for Anwar.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Here yep. we are. So we're going to destroy the Anwar, that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, it's really as bad as it could be. And I'm just, I feel apathetic. I really just feel like, you know what?
We told you this was
yep.
going to happen.
Yep.
And
yep.
you know, our Stein friends
I didn't
and
just
the racist
say
Trump
all
people
that thing. I didn't
high-fived
say,
on election night
yeah.
and said, isn't that great that we bucked the system? Okay. Now what?
Like, I wasn't being hysterical when I was saying, like, you can't vote for these people because these are the things they're going to do. These are the things they're telling you they're going to do, and these are very bad things. Oh, no. Fuck that. I hate Democrats. Blah. And now it's happening, and I'm like, well, I don't know what you want me to, I don't know what you want me to do. I don't fucking vote for these people. I told you not to vote for these people. I told you what would happen if you did. You did. Then they're doing it. What the fuck do you want from me? I don't, what? What?
Fix it, Rachel.
Fucking
tell me
fuck
it's going to be okay.
No, it's not going to be okay. It's not at all. It's going to be horrible. Just like I said. And if that's what's happening, like, fuck off.
Mom,
don't look at me.
You said not to drink bleach, but I drank it. I don't feel so good.
Great.
But it's okay, right?
Fix it. Make it so I didn't drink the bleach. No, I fucking told you not to. Fucking told you not to. I fucking told you what would happen if you did, and then you did. So, die. I don't know. It's not my fucking problem. Don't look at me. I didn't do this. It's so infuriating.
Yeah, it is. And here we are. And like I said, unless they're able to pass like sweeping, like even more awful the gerrymandering and kick millions and millions more people off the rolls where the Voting Rights Commission seems to be off the rails now for the time being, which is good. Yeah, they'll probably get tossed on their ass in 2018, but the damage will be done.
Yep.
And instead of like what we could have done in inheriting a strong economy and things going on the right path, like we did from Obama, and making progress.
Better.
Now we have years and years of cleanup to do.
Yes.
So thanks again.
All progress is lost, and it's going to get worse. And we don't get to, like you said, start from a strong economy and then like improve it with all of these great things. We just trashed a strong economy, so now we basically just burn the house down.
Yeah, not to mention what's happening at the EPA and with climate change and with science and research and development in this country that's being basically, you know, met with an LOL, and literal people that are completely unqualified are being appointed to judicial branches. Although even some of even Republicans are stopping some of them, and it's like, come on, dude, you can't like put your gardener or your
accountant. Lawyer guy who like literally could not. He's never tried a case.
Yeah.
He's never really practiced law in a way. And they want to put him on the court, and he literally couldn't answer basic questions.
Yeah, even the Republicans
the
were like,
system.
No.
And he like withdrew his name.
Yeah, there a bunch of them are
humiliated.
A bunch of them are withdrawing because they are completely unqualified. So
it's so funny that used to matter. I mean, it does actually matter in some cases. Like, but we have Trump now, so it's like everyone goes, "Oh, but so like we have Trump, so he's unqualified to sit on the bench. Who cares?" And you're like, "No, that's actually like." That's actually a thing. Like being a judge it's a thing that requires a certain skill set and knowledge base.
Yeah, in the old days, if you submitted somebody who was qualified but you didn't like them partisan, you'd grill them a little and you'd poke them a little at the confirmation hearing, and then you'd vote for them, or some wouldn't vote for them, but they'd get appointed if they were qualified. And then that was how it worked.
And no one would put anyone up that wasn't at least like highly qualified.
Well, Bush tried to put Harriet Myers on
Harriet
the Supreme
Myers
Court.
With that one exception, he tried to put his personal lawyer up on the Supreme Court.
And he put a few garbage people in.
And he
in
was laughed
to,
out of the world for that. But in general, the argument used to be, let's pick the most partisan person we can find, but they have to have the most stellar qualifications because that's the argument, right?
Like Gorsuch, right? We can't stand him, but he's qualified.
He's very qualified. And there was, did you hear this story? I don't know if it was this week or last week, that Trump was going to withdraw his name because he was afraid he, quote, wouldn't be loyal.
Yeah, because in the confirmation hearings, when they asked Gorsuch, hey, Trump said these horrible things about Judge Curiel and these other things, that's bad, right? Yeah, I guess that's kind of bad. And Trump
he's not
going to
be loyal. Like, we're literally living in North Korea right now. Yeah. Like, that's where
well,
we
they
are.
They talked him out of that, at least. I mean, I would have loved to see like him pull Gorsuch and then nominate some other jackass. Maybe this guy that got rejected for the federal circuit court or whatever it was.
I mean, it's just
it's
just so ridiculous.
Yeah. So Trump's going to continue to unravel and say crazy shit, and it's like I think everybody's kind of just whatever at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just passed a catastrophic tax bill. Yeah, he's going to derail the Russia investigation. Yeah, he was obviously in cahoots with Russia. And all this stuff is polling, obviously, is the way you'd think it was. Like, people know what's going on. We just have no control over it because we voted the wrong way.
We didn't.
Well, as a country.
Yes.
So,
yep.
There we are. Happy holidays. You'll be...
I mean, I don't know. It's like, well, okay. I don't know. It's exhausting.
It is. We should also talk about, was it the EPA or no, it was the CDC where you couldn't say, they wanted to scrub words like diversity and...
Fetus, science-based, evidence-based. Now, I heard that was
seven
debunked.
Words.
Somebody posted something from the CDC that said that's not true.
Okay. All right.
That was taken out of context, and that's not really true.
Okay.
So I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I've only read.
It wouldn't
very
surprise me.
Level
I
stuff.
Think is why it was so widely shared.
Right.
Because that's exactly the kind of thing you'd expect. But then somebody said the CDC came out and said that's not true.
Okay.
So maybe it is or maybe it isn't. I haven't looked into it because my life is ridiculous right now.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
just
we
saying
said,
maybe that
sorry.
Happened, maybe it didn't. This is a great podcast.
Yeah. Interruptions of football commentators and us not
we don't really know anything.
Being up on the news, what's going on. Let's pivot a little to Mika Brzezinski.
Okay. Tell me what happened.
Okay. So yesterday on Morning Joe, Mika Brzezinski, the lovely fiance of Joe Scarborough, remember the two people that now supposedly hate Trump but did nothing but kiss his ass through most of the primary and until sort of the last days of the general?
Yep.
Morning Joe. Are buddies with him and hang out with him in Mar-a-Lago.
He used to call in all the time during the campaign. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're also buddies with Mark Halperin.
Yes.
And we've covered the Mark Halperin stuff in detail. We don't have to rehash it. You know what he did. If not, look it up. He's a horrible, awful, gross, rapist, garbage, harasser, gross person.
Yes.
But he's buddies with Joe and Mika. Mm-hmm. And some of his friends, much like Glenn Thrush with the New York Times, the New York Times is not firing him. They're just like, well, yeah, I guess it was bad, but fine. He can still do his thing because the New York Times has become a birdcage liner, unfortunately. Mika got up yesterday on the show and said, you know, Mark Halperin is really, really sorry for everything he did. And he wants to apologize face to face to these women. And I've been trying to arrange face-to-face meetings, but a lot of them, or most of them, just aren't interested. And I think they owe him a face-to-face sit-down so he can apologize in person. And the world melted down, as it should. And at first, she tried to not really walk it back, but say, oh, well, just understand, I'm just trying to start an important conversation.
No.
And then the world melted down more.
No.
And then she finally basically completely backtracked and said, okay, you know what? No, my bad. Nobody has to do anything. I'm sorry for saying that. And she still took the old line, but it's an important conversation that I was just trying to start.
No, it's not. It's not an important conversation that you were trying to start at all.
No,
it's not. His victims, okay. First of all, his victims don't owe him anything. He doesn't get to apologize to them. He doesn't get to do anything anymore. He doesn't get to do anything. They do not owe him anything. Taking that and taking it a step further, I would just like to say women generally do not owe anyone anything, right? I don't owe you a fucking smile on the street. I don't owe you a conversation in an elevator. I don't owe you sex because you bought me dinner. I don't owe you the opportunity to apologize after you sexually assaulted me. I don't owe you fucking anything. Women are entire, complete, autonomous human beings in the world. We don't owe anyone anything and no one's fucking entitled to us. Period. That's women and men and children. That's everybody. But there is this fundamental sense of entitlement about women that has to stop. Mm-hmm. And it's so pervasive that women do it to women.
Yeah.
But it's bullshit. And when it's pointed out to men that I don't owe you a fucking smile, or I don't owe you sex after you bought me dinner, or I don't owe you a conversation in an elevator, the reason we know that there's this entitlement is because men get violently ragey angry.
Yeah, they can.
They call you a cunt, or they push you around, or they rape you, or they murder you. So there, it's not that we're saying there's this sense of entitlement that doesn't exist. It's that when we say to you, you aren't entitled to that and I'm not going to give it to you, you violently react as though I just took something from you that was yours.
Yeah.
And that's the fundamental sense of it. That's what entitlement is.
And it doesn't even have to be necessarily dramatic. If any woman has ever been on a dating app, a dating site, and a man expressed interest and you're not interested and you let them know,
politely or impolitely, thank you.
Now, not every man does this, of course, but plenty do. And I have seen it firsthand from my female friends. Yep.
I was just having a conversation with a dear friend of mine the other day, and she went on a date with this dude. And this dude, she got date pretty, right?
Sure.
And they met, and he showed up in sweatpants and a sweatshirt and looked like he hadn't showered or bothered to care. And she was very disappointed in that. And the night didn't go great. And he later revealed to her that he had been like secretly doing drugs on the date and all. It was kind of a nightmare. So the next day he's all sweetness and light. Well, I wouldn't say that. He said some pretty gross things, but, I really enjoyed spending any time with you. And I'd really love to see you again. And you know, da, 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 da. And she said, well, that's lovely. That's great. And I appreciate that. But can I be honest with you? And he said, yeah, of course. And she said, you know, I just feel like you really didn't try very hard. Like, you showed up in sweatpants and a sweatshirt, and we were going to, like, a nice dinner. And, you know, this is over text. She sent me all these texts. Before she could even get out the rest of what she was going to say, which was that, you know, that's not the most important thing, but, like, it just shows that maybe you give a shit at all, right? Like, that... you know, like take a fucking shower and put on some jeans or something. You know what I mean? Before she even gets to explain what she was going to explain, which is whatever it was, we don't even get to know that now. her text is like barely 3 seconds old, and she's on to the second one where she's trying to type to him the rest of it, and he's fired off like 4 or 5 texts. You fucking cunt. Never fucking talk to me again, you goddamn nightmarish piece of shit. How dare you say that to me? And how dare you fucking da 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 da? I mean, meltdown. Meltdown. Name calling. I mean, the whole full ball of wax. Because she said, hey, maybe when you go on a date with a pretty girl, don't wear a sweatpants and a sweatshirt at a nice restaurant. That's all I'm saying. Before she could even, like, you know, do the girl thing where you, like, sort of capitulate and say, but, you know, if maybe we want to try it again sometime, just know that, like, if we're going to go to a nice place, I'd like you to be dressed appropriately. No. The full meltdown. So, you know, I mean, it happens all the time. Like, it's the male rage is so barely being covered. It's so very close to the surface.
Yeah.
That even a tiny little scratch and it comes roaring out at you.
And it's hard for me to relate to that and understand where it comes from. Like, I'm a guy and I've had my share of rejection, mm-hmm. Especially in my younger years, mm-hmm. when I didn't know my ass from my elbow and how to talk to a woman or how to dress or anything.
Right.
And it's hard to understand where the sense of entitlement comes from. I don't know if it's the way you're raised or...
No, it's pervasive, though, in the culture.
Yeah, it is. I understand that. And
it is.
And back to the Mika thing for a second. What was interesting was a lot of people were telling her, well, you obviously have never been sexually assaulted. She said, well, actually, I was. Mm-hmm. And you brought up an interesting point that it complicates the matter and where she might be coming from as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, it does. Because people are like, oh, that's even worse. They're like, oh, my God, if you've been sexually assaulted, how could you possibly blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
It's not that simple. It's not that simple. It's way more complicated because she has been. Because... as we've talked about on this podcast before, sexual assault is complicated, and it's not complicated, right? Don't sexually assault people. It's very simple. But women's relationships and their sense of self-worth and value and how we're taught about consent muddies the water. And it's just like we talked about with Asia Argento and Harvey Weinstein, that they remained friends for, I wouldn't call it friends, whatever, but like, perhaps in Mika's life, and I have no idea what her story looks like, but perhaps she was put in a situation where she was made to feel she convinced herself or was outwardly convinced or somehow that she had to forgive this person and, mm-hmm. and he apologized. And then she's a woman. So she's been socialized to defer to men and accept apologies. And maybe she went through something that, something like that. And so for her, that muddied the water of who owes who what. And so for her, it was, well, you know, he just wants to apologize. Like, my person apologized and I listened and maybe that's good. And maybe it helped
maybe
her.
Maybe it works for her. Yeah.
Some, I mean, we don't know, but her having been sexually assaulted doesn't change the fact that she shouldn't have said it, but it's not that she's like a traitor to assault victims or something. It's just that it complicates her reaction to this, I think.
It probably does, but I also think her motivation is just the rehabilitation tour for her friend Mark Halperin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gross.
Yeah.
Because she's not thinking of the victims. She's right. Thinking of her friend.
Right.
And her friend needs to pay the consequences.
Yes.
He does.
Correct. That's correct.
I mean, you know, if I had my way, he'd be cast out to an island and we'd never see his ass again.
And likely whoever assaulted her did not face any consequences. And so there's this great unfair that's going on with a lot of people with, well, you know, people have been doing this for centuries. Now, all of a sudden, I have to face consequences, but they didn't. And it is. There's this sense of unfair going on. And it's bizarre, but I kind of get it, right? Like, everyone's been getting away with this thing forever, and then suddenly I did the same thing and I'm getting punished. The problem with that is you always knew it was wrong, mm-hmm. and so did all of them. And I don't give a shit who did what. If you did something like that, you deserve consequences, and it just sucks that they didn't get them. It doesn't suck that you did.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's that. We got just a couple minutes left. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Festivus, Happy Krampus.
Happy Solstice.
Solstice, yes, for all you pagans out there.
Yep.
Although Christmas is basically a pagan holiday.
Correct.
Even though the Christians don't want to tell you that.
Uh-huh.
It's all pagan traditions.
Yeah, it is.
Anything else we want to talk about Christmas for a minute?
Sure. The war on Christmas.
We haven't even bought our presents yet.
No, it sucks. I was trying to buy all the things on Amazon yesterday. Felt like my dad buying Christmas presents on Christmas Eve, shopping on Amazon on the 21st.
Yeah.
And then the 22nd. And then they totally fucked me. I had all my shit in my cart at like 11. And it was like, yes, we'll be delivered by 24th. Great, great, great. And then work is nuts. And by 3 o'clock when I went to go check out, they were like, December 27th. And I was like, motherfucker. So now I have to actually like go to a store, I guess. I don't know if I have that in me to
Good
do
luck.
That. I don't know, but I fuck, you might all just be getting your shit late. I don't know.
Well, when I was younger, that used to be the tradition. I would literally schlep to the mall on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, my dad too.
And face the chaos.
Yeah.
And just wander around stores like, what am I getting? For who?
Oh my God, that's so you.
What should I get my mom? A doily?
Is this a thing you get a mom? I don't know.
It's like a brass elephant.
Some years
sculpture.
I'm really good about it. Like I'll like plan it all out. I have it all planned and I'm like, I'm on it. And then there's years like this year where I'm just like, fucking, I don't know.
I think I got my dad a wallet 10 consecutive years. Which worked out because he just destroyed them. So
well, we
never got him a tie.
My family pretty much just exchanged gift cards, which is a very strange
tradition.
I feel
that's what we do now. Yeah,
like we all buy for the same amount.
My dad just sends me cash a lot. Actually.
Yeah, but it's like why don't like it's like I'm saying I'm buying you this money to make you spend it on yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're buying me this money to make me spend it on myself. Why don't we just buy nice things for ourselves? And skip that part.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
It's just not. It's not the same. I've thought about that.
I just think it's
too.
A weird tradition to exchange same dollar amount gift cards back and forth. It's weird. But it's a thing we do in my family. And then my mom buys everybody a calendar every year.
A paper calendar.
Paper calendar.
Nobody ever uses.
No. I have them. I mean, sometimes like I'll put them up in January and then I'll look in like March or April and it's still on January. but
that's right. Calendars used to be a thing.
Yeah. She does that every year. She'll buy socks, which I actually really appreciate because I don't wear shoes.
No, I like that now. As a kid, I didn't. But now I'm like, buy me some
socks,
man.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
My grandmother bought me stationery every year.
Oh, really?
I don't know why. I didn't write letters. I think it was so I'd write letters
to
her.
So you'd write letters to her. Yeah, that guilty thing, yeah.
Which I did once, I think.
Yeah.
And then made paper airplanes out of the rest.
Totally. And then...
Stationery with kittens on it.
Stationery with kittens on it.
I did like cats, but, you know.
Who doesn't?
I was also a 10-year-old boy.
Right. Yes. And then we have prime rib at my folks that my dad overcooks every year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's brown in the middle, which is not supposed to be. But my little brother's here from Boston this year, so hopefully he will pull the goddamn meat before it hits that point.
I think when I was 12, my grandma bought me one of those members-only jackets that would have fit when I was 6. And I was like, okay.
My grandma used to make clothes and send them to me, which was fine up until I was about 12. And then she still was making me clothes that in the size that was correct, but it looked like I was 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
you never grow up
in
grandma's
pink jumpers
size.
With lace on it and shit. And you're like, that is literally a 3-year-old's outfit that you just scaled up to a 12-year-old's body. Like, I'm not kidding.
You never grow up in their eyes. No. It's just how it is.
No.
I understand.
No. Yeah. So, yeah, I did not put my tree up this year.
Right. Yeah. I was going to tell you.
What?
Well, my little tree, should I put that
up? Where is it?
It's in the closet. We'll put it up right after this.
Okay, we'll put it
up. So we're going to go now and put up the Christmas tree.
Yes.
That shows you, just see, we are not participating in the war on Christmas. We are very pro-Christmas, we're not even religious.
No, of course not.
I don't know if I told you guys the story. I didn't even know Christmas had anything to do with Jesus till I was like 10. And I was spending the night at one of my Christian friends' houses. And like they're decorating the tree and stuff, and they're like, they start talking about Jesus. And I'm like, what does Jesus have to do with any of this?
Because you're Jewish, but your parents celebrated Christmas.
Yeah, well, we're not religious, so it's just like Santa and presents and, you know, eggnog. That makes sense to me. Oh, sure. this is a Jesus thing?
Well, how's this about Jesus?
This is about Jesus.
Jesus Santa?
What? It's weird. Anyway, so on that note, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, happy
holidays,
Hanukkah,
all
the
things.
And
we'll talk to you next week. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved at Irreverent Duo on Twitter, reverenttestimony@gmail.com. And some families are messed up while others are fine. If you think yours is crazy, well, you should see mine. My sisters are whack jobs, I wish I had none. Their husbands are losers, and so are their sons. Rap box foot. He likes to pelt carolers with icy.
snowballs. I'd like to take them out back and deck them more than the halls. With family like this, I would have to confess I'd be better off lonely, distraught and depressed.